This is the Tabernacle Podcast with Steve and Stacy Arnott and me, John Vermilia. What's up, Steve?
I'm good.
You're good? A day off work is a good day?
Well, I'm not totally off. I've got to drive to Grand Rapids this afternoon and for some training next couple of days. So
you're moonlighting?
Yeah, I guess.
Moonlighting. And Stacy, what about you?
My schedule's mine.
Your schedule's mine. We're privileged to have you guys here today. Steve and Stacy have been a part of the Tabernacle longer than I have. The work Steve is referencing, no free shout-outs, TKS Security. He's got the jacket. He's got the mug. There's nothing on that mug, though.
No.
Are you still looking for a sponsor?
My other one has my name on it that my sons put on there in their machine shop.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get it on this one yet.
You have sons with skills. So if I can get all of them right, we have Bryson, we have Brady, we have Bevan, and your oldest, though, daughter, Brenna, two of the four are married, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and have seen all four of them over the years serving in this church as well. You serve as a family in a lot of different ministries, probably half of them I don't even know about. But it's a privilege to have you guys here today, because what we want to do is we want to talk a little bit about your journey. Stacy, I think you kind of grew up in this church, if I'm not correct.
Yeah, since we came when I was 12.
So let's start right there with Stacy, kick us off. The kind of home you grew up in, Christian home. How did you first come to church, and then your first encounter with the Tabernacle? If you could put that in a...
Sure.
Yeah.
My grandpa Dean, which was my dad, is Grant Sheets. It's his father, Dean. He grew up with my grandpa being Christian in the Methodist church over west of Buckley. So even though my dad in his younger years, straight out of high school, there was a spell where rebellious life, I mean, he would tell you all that. He wasn't living for the Lord. Got married young. But it wasn't too many years in. We were going to church there with my grandpa. And it was about, I was 7 or 8, I think. And Dad tells the story of his conversion being at my great-grandmother's memorial service. Mm. That he used that song, How Great Is the Lord, or How Great Thou Art.
How Great Thou Art.
Is one of the really
classic,
really special to us, but it really got a hold of my dad, and he was saved then. And I think sometime, I don't know all the details about my mom, but so we were going to Grant Church from the time I was little, and we'd meet with my grandpa for Sunday dinners and family and whatnot. So for as long as I can remember, at least once we moved out here by Buckley when I was 4 from Travers, we were going regularly in the Methodist church. And I think my dad and I have a little mix of how this happened. I think he was saved when I was 7 or 8. I personally made my own choice when mom and dad had signed us up for one of those release from school clubs that you could go to.
Oh,
back
yeah.
then you could do that.
Yeah.
It was a Bible club that the Methodist church in Kingsley had gotten a couple missionary ladies to come there and do Bible club on Tuesday afternoons. We'd be released and walk up to the church, have Bible club, get back in time to catch the bus and go home. So I remember going to that. And even though I'd grown up in the church and we had VBS and it was all about trying to be a good girl and learn the verses and memorize, you know, I just would get into it. But I don't think it was clear in my head, the simplicity of it was my choice to believe. And I remember prior to this, even as a kid, as you're kind of going through that childhood development of thinking about the abstract and the afterlife, I was about 11. I was afraid to die.
Yeah.
It hit me. I was afraid. And so I was going to this Bible club, and these missionary ladies basically presented the gospel to us, and they used the Treasures of the Snow series, some people might know about. It's a kid's story. And I realized I needed to make my own choice. And I did. That was my start. And of course, that brought peace and didn't need to worry. Doesn't mean I had arrived.
Of course not.
But so that was about 11. But around 12 is when, at the same time, my parents were growing spiritually, and in the even in the church where we were, they were getting very involved. I remember us going on things like bike-a-thons, overnight camp-out bike-a-thons, and my dad and mom and some other people sponsoring or chaperoning it and stuff, organizing it. So they were always very involved and growing. And not to badmouth other churches and things, but I think at the time, Dad would have said they were just hungry for more and whatever was next. And at the time, so was some other friends that were there that actually left probably about the same time we did. And how he knew of, he had friends that came here to Tabernacle, friends that he'd grown up knowing. I remember like Berta and Al. Berta went to school with my dad, high school. He knew Jim and Harriet Aker. And so he knew some people. And I think that maybe is like maybe why we decided to check out the Tabernacle. But when I was 12 is when we moved here and started coming here. And
by that time you had your own faith. You'd made a decision to follow Christ.
Yep.
Like that was the whole.
Yes, that was the start. I remember, you know, how we can quibble over terminology and whatnot, and that's a whole other story. But I do remember when I was about 15 going to a camp over at Camp Kenaniah on Lake Michigan.
My wife's been there.
I remember being out at the beach one night around a campfire, and whoever was leading it kind of called us around the idea of recommitting our life, even if we'd already decided to believe. Were we all in? Were we really committed to loving God and giving Him our all? And I, you know, looking ahead as you're a teenager, you're trying to figure out, where's my life going? Is this real? Am I really going to do this or not? And that was kind of a recommitment time for me.
Yeah.
And from then on, trying to grow.
I can remember the same, a similar experience of having I was born again at like 6.
Mm-hmm.
And out of fear of death, but it was about 14 at a camp. Are you really in? Are you really not in?
Right.
You know, and I love how you said that about we can quibble on the terminologies. But Steve, you didn't have the same kind of upbringing, did you?
Oh, boy.
Sorry, I don't mean to start therapy here, but
about, you say therapy and you talk about the Christian ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
And my home church, when I was really young, they were basically a notch above Mennonite.
Okay. So very conservative.
Very conservative.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We can go way down with stories with that. So I grew up, and it was, you know, the Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday nights.
Whenever the doors are open.
Yeah, every time the door was open, and then some.
Were there a lot of rules?
Very much.
Yeah.
There's stories of even missionaries going overseas and bringing back pictures, and they would critique the pictures before they would show them up front to make sure that the sleeve was below the elbow.
Oh, wow.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, in these tropical, sometimes jungle environments. Yeah.
I know. And I mean, so that was my upbringing until about 10. We moved to Florida. My dad, you're kind of on the subject of when you became a Christian. And that was, for me, it was about 6. And that was kind of the same thing. Out of fear, or I don't know.
That's what you should do.
Yeah, it was what I should have done, you know, should do. But, it was, I was sincere about it. But growing on into high school, I didn't want it at all.
You didn't want anything to do with it.
No, I was not out there living a wild life. But, and people to look at me and my life would probably say I was fine, but I knew.
You knew. Wow.
That my family knew. I mean, the ones that were close to me, up through high school, And we ended up in Florida because my dad, when he was young, had rheumatic fever, and it affects your heart. And I'm the firstborn of a second marriage for him. So I have an older brother, had an older brother and an older sister by his first marriage. And so the heart problem progressed to where he needed open heart surgery. And this was in Ohio, where I was born. And he had open heart surgery and had a stroke on the table and basically died. And they brought him back, but he was never the same. He couldn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. He couldn't drive. So it was pretty serious one. And with that, he had a ninth grade education, but could fix anything, everything. I mean, very, very smart that way. And he couldn't do that anymore. So it depressed him. And this is 70. Well, I was 7 years old. So 76 or so, 75, I guess. And anyway, so the depression was really bad. And so the doctors back then, they didn't have all the feel good meds, said, maybe go to Florida. That's where my sister and brother-in-law lived. And so they said, that'd be good. And it was really helpful.
So are you still involved in Church of Florida?
Yeah. Okay. So, Hope Sound. Went to Hope Sound. That's where
very conservative.
My brother-in-law. Yeah. My brother-in-law taught there. So that's where they lived. And so we ended up moving there to be with them in Florida, Sunshine. And that really helped him. But that was also, like you said, very conservative. Really what is not as conservative as you might think as what my home church in Ohio was.
Right.
They were quite a bit stricter. And but along with that, you're talking about the first time you were saved. And then through high school, it's like I didn't want anything to do with it.
Do you think that had something to do with the fact that the image you're getting, and again, we're not trying to bash, but it's as a young person, you hear this is just all about being a good person. This is all about like sin management. This is all just kind of rules mm-hmm. type of thing. Was that
very much
that
so.
Plus you're watching what happened with your dad? You're watching,
Yeah, I didn't blame God at all for what happened to my dad. That was just my way of thinking is like we live in a fallen world. Things happen. I still, see that way.
And you might add you were going to the Christian school too.
Yeah.
That was connected. So he's getting the double dose. Church. Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. I was in the Christian school.
Yeah.
There and. That's where for me it felt like it was almost crammed down my throat.
Yeah,
that right there is what really was like. No, don't cram this down my throat. Mm. So, when I was 17, my senior year in high school, just starting that year, when my dad passed away. Mm. So I was 17, and that is what really got me thinking, going, I know what's right. And it was about a year and a half later. And I was at work when it happened to say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm sitting at a desk working on electronics, not any altar thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is, this is what I need to do. I'm all in right there.
Wow.
At work. It was more of a head thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, this is a decision. And that from that point is when I was committed.
That's interesting to me that both your father and your husband, the pivotal moment was a death, was a loss of a father. I'm mm-hmm. sure you probably thought about that before. But and it's also interesting to me that for yours, it was missionary ladies being intentional and basically doing discipleship coupled with a camp experience on a beach, you know, and that yours, very cerebral, at work, working on electronics, which I don't know how to do, and I'm always amazed by your ability to do those things. But that's where it began. Where did you guys meet? Did you guys meet in college?
Well, I never went to college.
You went to New England Tech.
I went to a tech school.
Gotcha.
But living in Florida.
And then I came down there to the college that was connected with the academy where he had gone and the church.
Gotcha.
So yeah. Hope Sound Bible College. I come from Michigan to go there. It's Kelly Aker had gone there.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Pearson. And so Marcy and I just.
Michigan girls hanging out in Florida.
At that time.
And you found a Florida man.
I didn't necessarily want college just for college. I felt like, of course, back then everybody was pushed, got you college.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you don't know what you want to do, which
exactly.
I don't necessarily always agree with now. But I thought, okay, I'll go at least for some Bible.
Yeah.
Can't hurt me to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Have an experience. Yeah.
So I went down there, and because his brother-in-law was one of my professors, and somehow, and I can't remember how, they were always having young people up to their house. So somehow they must have liked me. Somehow we connected. I started getting other girls, which were my same age, because Jane was 20 years apart from him. So her girls were actually, he was their uncle, but barely older than them. And so I knew the family, and I don't even remember the first time that he saw me. It was one of those times I was up to visit, and of course he would go to his sister's house to hang out. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Sister's right. having all these college kids over.
Yeah, college girls, uh-huh. not kids.
So oh, yeah. That's where we first were introduced and got to know each other there. As far as getting together, it was out of that because after that first year, that the school had just started Touching Lives for Christ. Mm-hmm. Short-term missions trip, first year, and I felt like, yeah, I should do this. You know, I should go. And that's a whole other experience. Well, lo and behold, so did someone else think he should go and be part of the same team.
This is a mission trip romance?
Yes.
His sister and brother-in-law were leading it to Alaska.
Yeah.
And so I find out we weren't dating at the time. I barely knew, maybe by spring break, that there might have been some interest through them. I'm getting...
Yeah.
Hints. I had some other interests, so I wasn't even looking. But I was hearing from them there might be interests. I'm like, okay, whatever. We're going on this same team. And there were rules then that if you were a dating couple, you couldn't sign up on the same team.
Oh, yeah.
But nobody.
But there was no rules about if there's interest.
Yeah. Or that you could become a dating couple out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, which happened to more than one people, more than one mm-hmm. others that we'd heard about.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You really get to know each other real.
Yeah.
From boot camp to they see you looking your worst, hot, sweaty, filthy, whatever, they're going to see you. And there's no shower, you know, and, mm-hmm. and the whole thing. Or whether you go on a third world country trip. Ours was to Alaska, out in the remote sticks. And so that's where we ended up, the interest being more made known and coming together, dating out of that.
Nice.
So we say our first date was in... the woods of Alaska.
Oh, a little sneak away?
Well, no.
It was legit.
They had a little... So
hey, there's a statute of limitations. You're fine now.
We went to a... it was a youth camp.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our ministry.
Yes. Yeah, part of it. Yeah, she went out into villages and did VBS in the villages. Anyway. And...
Us girls, they would divide us up.
Gotcha.
The girls would fly out on this little bitty plane and do VBS in these remote Indian villages that you couldn't get there any other way.
So this...
They would do other things.
This camp, it was a youth camp for, you know, kids. And they did a banquet at the end. And so I asked her to go to the banquet with me.
All the kids, all in fun.
Oh, yeah. You could ask an escort. And so it was kind of like his way of making it known that it was real interest.
Nice. So when were you guys married? And where?
So we dated 3 years.
Three and a half.
Three and a half by the time we were married. But yeah.
91.
The end of 91. Came up here, married right upstairs.
Right upstairs, yeah.
Right upstairs.
Here at
T1. We didn't move here till 97.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We were married. We lived down there. My mom, my grandmother lived down there, and she taught at the school. She went through college. We got her at,
BA in elementary ed. So I taught first grade for 2 years.
Yeah. And then we had one little one and one on the way. Job kind of changed. And she had talked about kind of like your story, you know, Darcy brought you back to Buckley.
Oh, yeah. It's very similar.
I didn't insist. You know, I'm supposed to follow my husband, you know. Yeah. But
Darcy didn't either.
He had always said, you know, it's not like I would have chosen. Like, I really wanted to live in Florida. And he does remember living in Ohio because you were 10 when you moved, right?
Yeah.
And you had family in West Virginia, and you'd go to the family farm every summer. You had fond memories. So it's not like his heart was like, I got to stay in Florida.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too hard.
Yeah, but that's also typical. It's like even for us, a huge factor was we had kids. Mm-hmm. My wife had family close by. I'm traveling all the time. Your family's here.
Yeah.
So when you came back, like I assume in Florida, you guys are committed to church at that point. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. They actually, so the bus ministry, even we worked in the bus ministry together. I drove the bus. She was on the bus with the kids, and there was, you know, plenty of that. There was, well, I was in charge of it for a little while, but, it was a lot to do there. And of course, you know, we were there, jumped in, wherever.
So from the very beginning, being involved in church and being involved in serving at church, that was just natural.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume this is because, from what I know of you guys, and again, nobody's perfect, but like your relationship began on a missions trip.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two very committed people. And so I'm assuming from the very beginning, Christ is at the center of your marriage, or at least you're making the best effort to make him the center of your life and the center of your marriage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then I think also, you know, it was modeled for us. I think even your mom taught little kids classes, and my dad was very heavily involved and wanting to, you know, serve through and in and through the church and in the ways they were gifted, you know, mom and dad both being gifted differently. So that was modeled for me that's kind of what you do and the why of it.
Right.
Because I think that's one of the really good things about when I grew up with my dad and mom. It helped me to know the whys behind everything we did.
Right.
And if you know me, my aunt would tell you, from the time I was little, can barely stand and peek over the top of that table, I was always asking why.
I can imagine that.
I want to know reasons why.
That's not a bad thing.
Not
that's
to be rebellious, but I remember even in seventh grade, teachers, and I did go to public school, but I remember things like, I didn't want to just swallow what you tell me. And I remember, I think this seventh grade teacher was a Christian, although he didn't really make it known a lot in school. But I wasn't trying to be rebellious, but I remember asking why, because I wanted to know, is that your opinion or is that fact? And then I need to decide what to do with it. But sometimes it was threatening to people. And I remember that one teacher, he didn't even like me asking why.
Right.
He took it wrongly, probably. I wasn't trying to be ugly. But I think that was good that mom and we could talk about anything. And I wanted to know the whys behind faith and why we do what we do.
Why we believe what we believe.
Yep.
So 97, you move here. Was it straight to, was it, hey, we got to find a church, or did you already know the church you were coming to?
Well,
was it just
she
natural?
Grew up in this one. And you know, this is.
Yeah, we came here.
This was just kind of by default.
Right.
It's where family was. And part of us moving, I think, kind of what you said about kids, not that we wanted to be away from his mom. His mom at the time had more freedom and luxury to come up and visit, even for long-term visits.
Right.
My parents were still heavily working. And I thought, we're having kids. They're never going to be part of their life.
Yeah.
Seeing them once a year is not what I want, Lord willing. And we thought, yeah, we want to move. Grandma Arnett can still come visit and be part of life. And now she's gone. She passed in 2010. So I wanted that for my kids because I knew my parents were still young and they would be very involved in their life.
Right.
And so that was a big factor in why we moved.
So you move here in 97. You get involved in the church. Or at least attending, did you do the exact same thing? Because that's difficult when you got young kids. Was it, because it sounded like you were serving even before Brenna and Bryson. Well, Brenna was born and Bryson was on the way, your oldest daughter and your oldest son. Was it an easy thing to do? Was it a guilt thing? Because one of the things I know about your entire family is they're all involved. And they, from your brothers, your brother Sam in particular, and your whole family, it's just like, this is what you do. Or was it one of those things where, let's think about it, do we have time, or is it
there
like—
There was never that. And I talked to you, I said about my dad being, could fix anything. And he would always, I mean, I was a little kid, and I would go with him to the church and fix things.
Yeah.
It was modeled.
Yeah.
It was never like, you know, it just was so natural. I mean,
so here you just jumped into, oh, you need something fixed. I know how to fix it.
Yeah.
And and you're still doing that.
Well, yeah.
30 years later, you still do that.
Funny story I talk about, you know, the sound stuff.
Yeah.
And I do that still. When we got here, it was, oh, wow.
It was a little rough.
It was four channel, like an old four channel PV that, The knobs, you would turn them and it would be like,
oh, they so crackle
scratchy.
Right through the mic. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It was in a closet, and they're like, here you go. Well, okay. I didn't really have any experience with it at that point, but
didn't they finally cut a hole in the wall so at least
that
had
was
a window
me.
To see out?
You cut the hole in that wall.
Oh, yeah.
So you could
yeah.
see the stage.
Beneath the bell tower.
I mean, yeah.
Hopefully the bell never comes down because it's going all the way to the basement. Take Steve on the way.
You would step into a closet and make an adjustment and step out the door to hear what you did.
I remember that. And I remember before that window was cut.
And it was like, this is terrible. I can't. Yeah. I can't see. I can't
and
hear.
And we hadn't moved here yet. That was just visiting my wife.
Yeah.
And it's like, who's that guy that keeps, oh, that must be the sound dude back in that little, just back in that little
So
corner.
Somebody donated a whole, like a real soundboard.
Yeah, and, we were moving up in the world then.
Yeah. Well, you know, people were struggling up front trying to hear themselves and all that stuff. And so somebody said, hey, we'll buy the stuff. And it shows up and they're like, here you go. And I'm like, oh boy, what
I gotta
do I
figure
do
out how
this?
To install my first sound system.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I ran wires. I've been in every attic crawl space there is.
Chasing the bats.
All
and the ghosts.
The bats.
That was
for you.
So I know that you have, Stacy, you've been involved probably at every level with children. I know that for sure. I know even more recently, how many small groups have you guys led and hosted? But what I'm interested in is, can you remember at one point you decided we're going to go all in with the church and become a member of the church? Like, do you remember when that happened? Or was it pushed? Or was it just—
Before a date, I think for me, when you say become a member, I were already viewed, if I'm coming here, I'm here once we decide that's our church family. It didn't have to be the official put my name on a paper. I was already there
gotcha.
In my heart and head.
Right.
So I don't even remember whenever they thought you had to have it. Probably when it came to voting. If
okay.
your name wasn't on the list.
Gotcha.
Then, well,
so
that's
like
just
at
a formality.
An annual meeting or a church meeting.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I'm a part of this church and yeah, I want to vote for this or I want to vote against this or whatever. And then someone maybe said, uh-oh, wait a second, you're not on the roll.
Right. So that was more of a formality versus my head and heart were already there. And so it was like, of course.
Yeah. And I don't remember a little questionnaire or anything. It was just like, well, yeah, okay.
Right.
Put my name on there or something.
I mean, we may have looked at the form and, of course, the big rocks, yeah. You know, the beliefs mm-hmm. and the mission. Yeah. And what am I signing? Because you don't want to sign things that you...
Well, the statement of faith.
The yeah. Constitution yeah. was part... Yeah, and you look through that, of course. But, yeah, I don't remember a real, like, oh, this
a
is a... Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember this being a struggle.
Right.
It wasn't a struggle for real. I mean, it was like the only... And you probably know this, where we were going when we came back and things were struggling here. And we had a little girl and one on the, well, yeah, he was born just a few months after we were here. So we had two little kids. And we're looking around going, okay, there's us, there's Pearson's. There's,
I think there were only about at the lowest 30 some.
Really?
Yeah, but for couples
so
that were our
back
age,
when the church was really on the struggle.
I think Wellings, Pearson's, and us were the only three families that age with little kids, and then it was 50.
Well, that and I would say up. That was not right when we first moved back. It okay. was bigger. And it was more, and I can't remember numbers.
Yeah.
But at the point of a few years after when we struggled and had all that stuff going on and we hit our lowest, I remember it being around 30.
Right.
And I remember us going through a talking mm-hmm. about and praying about, do we leave? I mean, other people, it's like when you're hungry.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't seem like things are happening, I don't blame people for if they feel led to go somewhere or they're not sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, go check it out. You pray, see where God takes you. We seriously thought about it, mm-hmm. mostly because we had our kids by then.
Right.
And we have four. And
you're looking for a church that's got more stuff, more little kids, and more young people.
It's like, yeah. Is there a future here for my kids?
Mm.
And we didn't feel quite released to leave.
Mm.
So we didn't.
So even during that time, you're still serving.
Oh, man.
You're still fixing. Well, you're doing, and now there's more and more holes.
It was like this. That, I think it was like one of the first meetings, and somebody said, "I nominate Steve to be on the board," and I'm like, "Whoa, no!" I declined it right then and there. I was like, "No way!"
How long have you been here? Just a couple of years?
No, not even that.
Oh, wow!
It was like the first year. Bang. Nominated from the floor.
Oh, wow.
Nobody even had
done
said
a little differently.
Anything.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody even asked me ahead of time.
Oh,
it was
my.
Just like.
And so
right
you declined.
Then. But eventually it was, you know,
yeah,
got on the board. But
yeah, I can't remember how many years in before we hit our low point, but I do remember.
It was a couple, I think, you know.
But, it kind of all runs together in my head. But yeah, I was able to, and of course, when you're small.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the 20 doing the 80% of the work.
Yep.
And I don't say that bragging. It's just like when there's work to be done, if you're willing and able. And so even though I had littles, my area had been teaching with children. So I was helping take my turns leading children's church, ran some VBSs. And then out of that probably grew. I took my stint on the board as Sunday school superintendent. And it's just that. We didn't have, it wasn't a huge church to pull
right,
from.
Right.
Not a great big pool.
And just to fill in some gaps for our listeners, because we have so many that are new to the church, and they hear me reference, there was a moment where this church almost died or could have died. And that's right around the time, you know, I'm hearing stories, we're living in North Carolina, and this is right when you guys are moving here. And there was a struggle within the church of, are we going to have a future or are we not?
Mm-hmm.
And not to disparage, but it was very much what we're against as a church, very little of what we're for. And you could see that in the community, and it wasn't very attractional. And not that, and I think we have enough history to know that what I'm saying is true. Not that we're gospel light now. But we like to focus on the major things of what we're for and not all of the little rules things mm-hmm. that we're against. Well, what that did to this church is it was becoming like a stranglehold, and people are leaving. And then the leadership didn't want to change and didn't want to leave. And so I'm not trying to gloss over that.
Yeah.
But we've had board members that served with you on this podcast during that time. And I, like, you guys are my heroes, because to not only keep the lights on, but to stay faithful and stay committed, even when, like you said, it doesn't look like there's a future. Like, you were here during the dark times. For someone who's in their 60s or their 50s, 60s, or 70s, it's like, well, this is the only church I've ever known. Mm-hmm. You guys are in your 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, we have little children. And is this the church we're going to be able to stay committed to?
Mm-hmm.
So I know that eventually, very painfully, with a lot of counting of who's a member and who's not a member and phone calls, make sure you're here on voting day. I've heard all of those horror stories. We get to a place where then there was a period of time where there was no leadership, where there was interims, there's guest mm-hmm. pastors. I assume lay persons had to step up and lead. And all this time, I think at this time you're on the board, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think, Stacy, you were still on.
She wasn't at that point.
Yeah.
No, I think, I remember Reverend Hyde was there. He was a godsend, sweetheart of a man.
Gary Hyde was interim pastor.
I think that was after Frelick.
No, before him.
Before him.
Yeah, okay. I know the name Hyde. I know Frelick was here.
Mm-hmm. He was about a year.
Yeah. And then at some point, we get Tom.
Tom.
Shelder.
Shelder, yeah. Who actually began, like I like to say, like Nehemiah, just start to mm-hmm. rebuild the walls,
mm-hmm.
Just loving people, very pastoral. He's a big-time shepherd. Mm-hmm. He's still in the area. He lives in Traverse and does counseling now.
Mm-hmm.
But membership never wavered. Well, wavered, but stayed faithful. The commitment is still there.
You're talking about how many, you know, asking if we were still serving, committed, whatever. I think there was five-ish different titles I had.
Five different jobs.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I mean, I was Jim Aker was the chairman. I was the co-chair, or whatever you call it. Pat was the treasurer.
My mother-in-law. Yeah.
I was the assistant.
And so you're the vice chair and the assistant treasurer and the sound guy that does the electronics.
Every Sunday, doing the sound.
Yeah.
And, I think you helped on the trustee committee.
I was a trustee.
Fixing stuff with the building.
Yeah. I was on, and
but there weren't that many of us left.
I remember one time Pat was so aggravated one time. She's like, I just quit. And I'm like, no.
No, don't
please,
do it, Pat.
Yeah. Don't. I can't do all this.
Wow.
It was just, you know.
You guys literally were keeping the lights on. So then we.
But back to that. That time of wondering if we were going to stay or go. it was like, you know, God didn't let us, basically.
Mm.
So I was like, well, okay. I'm going to put my shoulder in the harness and pull.
Praise God.
As hard as I can. That's what we did. You know, you just pull for all you're worth.
Yeah.
To keep going.
If you're wondering what loving God and loving people looks like, that's in Steve's tears right now. Yeah.
Yeah. What else do you do? I mean, you know, I'm not my love language, I guess, is do something for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that was my love language back. Mm. That's what I felt. So I wanted to do something. I'm crawling around in attics, fixing electrical. I'm running wires. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, that's what I did.
So we're serving, we're participating,
Our
kids are involved, and like my intention is not to make this like a tab puff piece. I just love history. And I love seeing God's faithfulness and God's people's faithfulness to him within that thing, or within that whole journey. And so it was during that time, I'm a part-time youth pastor. Tom resigns. You were a part of the board at this time when Jim Aker called me and said, We'd like you to be our pastor. And I remember saying, I don't think you do. And he was like, no, I really think we do. And I love Jim. I think I mentioned at his funeral just a few weeks back that on his deathbed, he told me that he had hatched a plan when he first met me, which I blame him now, right? He could barely get out the words, but it was before I was even married to Darcy. I was just Twitter-pated and was here just visiting, wow. You know, back before you, this is while you guys lived in Florida, I think. And yeah, so I said yes, and then began the journey. And the reason I say it's a journey, I can't take credit for this. We have to give God the glory for this. Mm-hmm. But I think about the importance of you guys and people like you that had more invested in this church than I did, more years invested than I did, who kept the lights on. And now here I come in, I'm not wearing a jacket, not wearing a tie. I got all these ideas. We want to paint the place black. We're gonna flip the sanctuary in a new direction. And it was change after change after change after change. And this was part of my thing with Jim at the very beginning. I don't think you want me to. I really, you know, we want to. This is what we prayed for. There's stories of people like Pat, like Jackie Cade, like Berta, the men of the church that used to come early and pray for God, do something with this church. And I know you guys are praying. And then all of a sudden, change happens. And change, and this is where, I don't know what Martin wanted us to talk about on this thing, but this is what I'm most interested in. We want change, but change was hard. Change was trial and error. Change was, wow, this could really blow up in our face. Mm-hmm. And some things worked. A lot of things worked. And some things didn't. And I had the benefit of a very gracious board that it was support and it was unity. And there were hard, long conversations. But can you speak to any of that from your side of the story, so to speak? Invested, all in. Because I know that change wasn't easy for any of us, but especially when we come out of the traditions that we're used to.
I don't know that for me, I mean, like I said, my background being so conservative, I don't know that that was that terribly hard for some of the changes. I was pretty good with it. I don't know. Was there?
For me, I'll just be honest, it wasn't always easy.
I can remember some conversations
with you. It doesn't mean I was anti. So coming out of that.
You were the girl with your head over the table asking questions.
Why?
Which were good questions.
And so, well, first of all, I'm trying to think way back when some changes would be presented. I'd always be saying, wait, why? What's behind it?
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason? So if I would ask questions, maybe it was perceived as resistance or critical. It's like, wait. And to be honest, I was just sitting here thinking about change. Two things come to mind. First of all, if maybe like what Jim was thinking, if what we're doing is not working, should we not ask ourselves why that maybe change is necessary? Otherwise, it's insanity, like you've preached from the pulpit. I've used that
repeat
a lot.
The same thing over and over, yeah.
Because I found myself saying to a lot of people, life is all about change. Mm. What do you know that ever, ever stays the same except God himself? So if you can't control that, it's going to happen. It's more about your attitude toward it and what you're going to do with it, what you're going to let God do with it. Now, that doesn't mean you just compromise and go with the flow. And so I'm not that kind of person.
No.
I ask questions. I'm like, wait, do I want to go this way with this? I hope that's not rebellion, but that's just how I've been. I can be a follower. I can. And I'm not always a leader in whatever it is I'm involved in. But I have to know what I'm following is right and good. And so I'm not a risk taker to just, well, okay, whatever, we'll just deal with the consequences later.
Right, right.
So that whole idea of if it's not working, well, maybe we should do something different. And along with that, I think in recent years, I've been thinking a lot about man's traditions.
Mm.
A lot of even in the church. And I came in, it came up really clear with Bryson just getting married recently. Mm-hmm. And I had been telling the kids, yeah, there's no rules. You know, you make your marriage, your wedding, you're all about what you want. Now, short of there's a few rules to make
right.
it legal.
Right.
Or if you're trying to have a Christian marriage, you want to honor God.
Right.
But after that, most of the stuff is cultural or man's tradition.
Right.
And so there's not so many rules. And why should you feel bound by them?
Right.
So that, I think, coming into the church too, and maybe it's helped if you've been on any mission trips at all, or like if you had any experience with other cultures, Christian, even in Christian cultures, it can look different, but that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Right.
And I've been able to, it's like God teaches me that because I was never really good. I mean, sure, you kind of grow up, well, this is traditional. This is the way you do it. And maybe that was a good thing. There was that little bit in me that's like, really? Why?
Mm.
So that helped me. It wasn't always like it was instant. I sometimes had to take a while to process that
right.
and ask why and try to be careful that I wasn't second guessing other people's motives, which I will admit is a challenge sometimes for me because I don't want to just follow a leader just because or because they think they're all that in a bag
yeah.
of chips.
Yep. Yep.
I have to know that I respect and agree with them, and then I can follow.
Yeah, submission isn't blind.
Right.
And I've never gotten that from either one of you. Like sitting in a board, I'm just like right now, like the memory reel or like the movie reel is going back through my head. When as a board, we decided, man, we need to update our statement of faith. Because, and this is broad brush strokes, right? Mm-hmm. But it was a couple pages on what we would call the big rocks. You know, the importance of God, His glory, the Trinity, Christ, salvation. It was probably 3 pages, maybe. And then there was at least as many, if not more pages.
No, it was more.
All on the second coming and how you had to believe in pre or post or, you know, dispensations and all this kind of stuff. So, one of my favorite memories of Steve was being on the board at a time where we actually rewrote the statement of faith to focus on what we were for and what we felt like would create a big tent theologically. And Steve would show up with an old school Strong's Concordance, right? And I mean, we were into it. And he, you were a prime mover in that whole constitutional convention, and which was massive. And one of my favorite memories of Stacy, and I don't think this came out of a disagreement. I think, and I don't even remember what the issue was, but I remember that I had used this from the pulpit, and you came up to me, it was in this building, and it was about an issue, and you had your Bible. It wasn't that Bible, it was a different Bible. But you had your Bible, and I was like, oh, what's Stacy going to ask me? Is this a bad conversation? Is it a good conversation? Because I, you know, we're doing crazy stuff. We're painting stuff black. We're holding church service in the, you know, in the gym. You know, we had we had modern worship now. We'd rearranged the sanctuary so new people didn't get gawked at when they came through the side door, you know. And your face was glowing. Yours was. You were so excited because you were like, I get it. You said, with all this stuff that's changing— I don't even know if you remember this. You held open your Bible and you said that I said, show me. If you can't show me, then it's a man thing. And so on the whatever issue it was, like and that's when it confirmed in my heart really what you guys were about. It wasn't blind like, oh yeah, just let's start preaching from the Mormon Bible. Let's, you know, bring in you know, a circus on a Sunday. It wasn't any of those things. It was going to be a biblical, theological, ask the question why. You know, some people process fast, some people process slow. But when the process was done, if it was biblical or if it wasn't anti-biblical, Steve and Stacy were in. And they were in. And together, man, these last 20 years have been a ride of just, you know, I mean— we talked about before the show, whatever this is, before the podcast, that, you know, there was a time when there's less than 50 people. There's less than 40 people. You know, I talk about remembering a Sunday when we were visiting and it was 20 people or less. And I was related to half of them. And then this past Easter, three campuses, we had 1,709 people on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. We got to live that. Mm-hmm. We probably should have wrote more stuff down. Yeah. You know, I mean, we were hanging on. You're still serving everywhere. You're serving everywhere. Sorry, I don't mean to dominate this, but then I remember all of a sudden we've got all these new people and you saw a need. And the next thing I know, Steve and Stacy's home is open and there's small groups meeting and you're leading people, you're discipling people, you're involved with groups or with mixed groups, you're involved with men, you're involved with women, you're involved with the group at your dad's house. And so it's like, oh, we got all these fish, now we got to clean them,
yeah.
Right? And so there hasn't been a whole lot of time to write it all down. But what was the thing for you during that time? Was it, you said change wasn't always easy. What was the upside of change for you guys? Having witnessed what it was, having been a part of initiating change, and then kind of reaping the fruit of that, so to speak, like what were you seeing that was like the payoff?
Well, just the growth. And we've said more and more, even recent, we talked about, man, there's people coming through the doors that we thought we'd never see here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've heard that over and over.
A thousand times now, yeah.
And
that's always exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was even a thing that happened to me. This has been, I don't know, a year ago or so. I stopped by here to work on something. I don't even remember what it was.
TKS Security.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a camera or something. And I'm here on a Friday night on my way home from work. I'd stopped and I was doing something. And there was a bike club of high school boys on a Friday night. And I'm going, what in the world? That's crazy. What, you know, that's what all these men prayed for.
Praise God. Yeah.
That right there.
Yeah.
And you know, I told one of them, I was like, you know, you're rah-rah-rah about something. I was like, listen, there's a group of guys, high school age, on a Friday night, meeting.
Wow.
Getting fed the word.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's what all those prayers went for, or, you know, that's the fruit. And I, you know, it's funny. Somebody said to me not long ago about, you know, we were one of the originals. You're one of the originals. I was like, not really.
Not really.
You know, because they were thinking
last 20 or last 10.
Yeah, you were here before when in that time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not thinking I'm one of the originals. I'm thinking of the Coons.
Yeah. Wilson.
50. Yes.
Yeah, the Wilsons.
The older guy that was here. Anyway.
Janowski?
Yeah. That,
I mean,
that pastor.
Founders,
there's a Janowski pastor that was here a long time. He was a good one.
Yeah.
The Duffs.
The Duffs, yeah.
That's who I was
Meaty
trying to think
Duff.
Of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they were the ones that hosted the camp meeting.
Yeah.
That birthed the church, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, they're the originals.
Yeah.
Really.
Going way back.
Yeah.
You and Bob have a similar story. Bob actually told me a story. I think he's okay if I share with this. Bob doesn't care a whole lot about
Wilson?
Bob Wilson.
Okay.
They're snowbirds now. And mm-hmm. at Jim Akers' funeral, he told me a story of being 19 years old, got saved. He came to the church. I won't go into his whole life story, but at 19 years old, they put him on the board. And so because they were just short of dudes. And so he's on the board. He said, I didn't know nothing. He goes, you know, I didn't know how to read the Bible. I didn't know nothing. And we were trying to select a pastor. And they got a pastor in here. He goes, oh, he preached the paint off the walls. He was so good. Oh, he was exciting. And and then we went into the board meeting to vote on him. And someone said in the board meeting, he's Baptist. We can't have a Baptist in here. And he goes, and I was the deciding vote. And so I voted no.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't get that guy. And he goes, I felt, and then he was kind of at a loss for words. And when people have been married as long as Bob and Mary, Mary chimes in right at that moment. She goes, and we go to a Baptist church now in Florida, and it's wonderful. And I was just like, God has a way, despite human beings, mm-hmm. with all of our faults, and we're not perfect. We said that at the beginning. I'm not perfect. We don't have a perfect church here. But what I'm enamored with is God's faithfulness in response to, or at the same time, however it works, to our faithfulness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned the people that prayed. Your father served on the board. Your father, mm-hmm. part of leadership within this church. Your father struggled with change. He's one of the legends of this church. People love him. People that have visited here, and then I go see in another state, will be like, what was that guy who wears that fringe jacket? He's that short guy, you know, and I'm like, Grant Sheets? Yeah, Grant Sheets, right? Colonel Sanders, right? He's got, you know, he's rocking a little bolo tie. But what do you think you've learned about God in kind of that space of being faithful, seeing him faithful? What has that taught you about God or taught you in your relationship to God for the person who's listening when times are dark? And maybe it's not about church. Maybe it's about anything because life's not easy. We know that. But I go back to the reason we wanted you here is here's two people who've been faithful, and it's not always easy, you know, with marriage, with kids, with life, with church, and all that kind of stuff. But what's that taught you about God?
I've thought about this before the sermon on Sunday, but Sunday really hit it about Sunday.
Easter Sunday.
Yes, yeah, sermon okay. you preached yeah. just okay. Sunday. Everybody has a someday. And, you know, I've thought about this, I mean, off and on, I'm getting older, like you said.
Me too.
And you think about that stuff more. It's a natural thing, whatever. But there's six words keep coming back. Well done, good and faithful servant. Mm. And good. I can't be good enough. Hmm. That's Jesus' job. I'm going to hide behind him every time.
Yeah.
You know, well done, good. So that's covered. Faithful servant. That's my job. Again, it's like a...
Even then, it's in his strength.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, just be a faithful servant. Well, what does that mean? I mean, man, you that's easy and it's hugely hard.
Yes. Because there's times where you're like, I'm the 20% yeah. doing the 80% of the work. And then there's other times where it's like, I get to do this, you know, and everywhere in between.
You know, you talked about Jim. That was a faithful servant right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going back history. I mean, this is a history lesson, I guess.
Yeah.
So, that's for me, it's a decision. Mm. It's more like this is what I got to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to do, whether it's tough or not.
Yeah.
Being part of a church, I mean, I just was listening yesterday. I drive around a lot. On the radio, they were talking about habits and paths in the brain and mm-hmm. how you build habits. It's like building a highway.
Right.
Whether it's for good or bad.
Or for addiction. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that's kind of what the context was. They were talking about, so if you're on the freeway and it's not a good one, that's where you're used to traveling. It's smooth. You can go fast. But you need to be on the trail. And the more you're on the trail, that becomes a freeway.
Yeah.
The freeway becomes the trail.
That's brain technology right there.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with that. Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what they were talking about. And it rewires your brain to – so being part of church, you surround yourself with people that are following Jesus, living life for this. You're building that freeway to do, you know, what God wants. So that's really kind of where church comes in.
Yeah. It's even helping you build the new highways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's God's transformation.
Yeah.
That's that power of that community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stacy, what about for you? What have you learned about God's faithfulness and your faithfulness and commitment and all of that type of thing?
Well, God is very patient. He's patient with our growth process, because even if you grow up in the church, or maybe even because you grew up in the church, sometimes you can get... So when I said I want to know the whys behind what I believe, sometimes my personality, I'll come to a conclusion, with prayer or study or counsel or whatever, and you can think you know what you believe about something.
Mm.
And you can be pretty hard and be pretty persuasive and stuck in that, but I think God wants us to still be teachable.
Mm.
And for one, to make sure you're not letting pride rule. So I don't think this is me wanting to be prideful, but kind of along with that, seeking out the truth. I don't like to be lied to.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that's not a like, well, I deserve to not be lied
Nobody
to.
Nobody does. Yeah. Yeah.
I want truth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want a bazillion different opinions if they're not truth. And I think you name it, whatever the topic is, whether it's politics, health, stuff in the church, theology, whatever, I'm wanting the truth. And or what is best. And sometimes there's not only one right answer. I get mm-hmm. that. But if you are seeking for truth and what is right, I don't like to be lied to. I don't want to knowingly lie to anyone else. But God has shown me personally. I remember Christine King and I talking one time during a scrapbook thing of all things.
Good about, stuff happens at the scrapbook table.
I'm telling you, we have some pretty good conversations and tears and prayer and you name it. But we were talking about how we had very similar upbringing, and one of the things that we had kind of come to a conclusion about, it wasn't the specific theological idea, but it was that we were both hit with, have I thought a little bit wrongly about this for a while? And am I okay to consider there's another idea or another aspect of it that God wants me to consider and be open to it? And we were both kind of hit with the same thing. I don't even remember all the specifics or would need to go into it. But I think being teachable, even if you can, it's good to know what you believe and why.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can even be in error, or God might want to add more to it.
Right.
It's like, this is not necessarily all wrong, but this is how I want you to think about it. This is, and I want to be strong enough in my belief, whatever the topic is. Maybe I hope this isn't a wrong pride, but I've always told my kids, and I'm homeschooling them and training them and trying to do the best I can with God's help, still not perfect. But I remember saying to them, you be willing to stand alone if you're the only one to stand.
Hmm.
You need to know it and believe it that strongly. Now, that's in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm.
And to not be a coward that's just going to go with the flow, or when the peer pressure's on, or when you're worried what somebody thinks of you. And I tried to instill that in them. I tried to live by it. I hope not as a wrong pride thing. But when you look around and see what happens in the world, I admire and respect the ones that were willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I want to try to be like that. And of course, even in the faith, look how many mm-hmm. stood alone.
Jesus stood alone.
Exactly.
Hung alone, right?
But if you're
eventually
teachable,
the disciples, each one had to stand alone. Yeah.
You have to know it and own it that it's your faith. Do I really believe this or not?
Yeah.
In physical life on earth, you know, I have a different perspective now that this is just a way station.
Yeah.
This is a blip on the radar. If that, we are already living now, and if we're living in Christ, we're living, and then we're just going to go right on whatever gateway takes us there.
Right.
Whether it's an accident or a disease or whatever, or Jesus comes back. We're going to just go right on living there, which helps me, even if you're a believer and you're always worried about, well, how am I going to die or what's going to take me out or whatever. It's like, I don't need to worry about that. But I think when you ask me what it's taught me about God, my journey of watching the church grow, how he's growing me is, personally speaking, he's helped me to grow. If I was teachable, if I sought truth and not just what the status quo said, I think those are things that we should strive for. Because if we're all doing that, he's going to bring us together. There's going to be more unity. 100%. Not uniformity.
Right.
But unity.
Well said.
Which is tricky.
Yeah.
That's why you definitely want to let the Holy Spirit lead. You definitely be a person of the Word. And even then, it's our, I say sometimes our humanness gets in the way.
Yeah, our humanity.
It can.
Yeah.
Because we can, I mean, our thoughts aren't perfect. Our processes aren't perfect. But he's faithful. Yeah. He knows what it's going to take to get through us, get through to us, if it's a knock on the head or whatever. And one of the things he's taught me about himself, besides that I needed to let him grow me, is about the idea of community. A few years ago, I don't know when this really occurred to me, and I'm not saying it was original with me, but I've hung on to it, that his church family was his plan.
Mm-hmm.
Community was so important to him. And I thought, so look at him. If he's our example, look at him. The very entity of who God is.
Community.
Is community.
Tri-unity. Yep.
And I thought, well, of course, then how much more do we need that?
Right.
Even though we're imperfect and we should offer grace to each other because we're going to mess up a lot, we still need each other.
Right.
And I find that saying that a lot to people, you are not meant to do this life alone.
Right. And you can't live the Christian life alone.
No. Nope. The devil will take you out.
Oh, yeah.
If you isolate. I've said this to a couple friends over the years when I would be trying to be a friend to or minister to them and encourage them. And I can think of a friend, I won't name names, but this happened more than once with this particular friend dealing with issues and depression or when she was discouraged and she'd want to pull away. And I'd call her and invite her to something or say, come on, whether it was small group or coffee to get together just to see how she is or whatever. I like to be persuasive. If I really think it's good for them, and I would pray, Lord, I don't want to be nasty. I don't want to be pushy. I don't want to be whatever, but does she need me to push a little?
Yeah, a little push.
Does she need me to do this?
I can't imagine Stacy doing that.
And I would sense in my spirit, yes, she needs this.
Yeah.
Because I would tell her.
That's a good push. Yeah.
I said, when you feel like pulling away, be careful because it's very possible that's the last thing you should do.
Mm.
Because Satan knows, just like in nature, how do I take down? I isolate, I separate them out from the herd. I set them, even if you're not sickly, when you're separated out from the herd, you are so vulnerable.
Yeah, that's when it happens.
And he does that to us humans, and we can have all kinds of excuses and reasons, and we can think, I can handle it. I'm good. But if you do that not that we don't need our sabbaticals and our alone time to recharge, and depending on your personality, but as a way of life, don't do that.
Yeah,
because Satan is right there waiting to take you down. And so I remember every time I would say, come on, she'd always come back and tell me, I'm glad you did that.
Yeah,
I needed it and you were right. And I was like, I know and I care about you. I do not want Satan taking you down.
I don't know how many times I've heard guys show up at a Fight Club table and they're always, it's like a broken record. I didn't want to come tonight, but now I'm so glad that I did, right? You mentioned pride in there a lot. I think, not to puff your pride, but the essence of humility is teachability. You're still teachable. It's not the person that has a question. It's not the person that wants to know why. It's the person that's willing to be teachable. And in leadership, we talk about that all the time. It starts with me. I'm a learner. Everyone knows if John goes away for 3 days— and I'm visiting some church or I'm at some conference, when he comes back, he's like, oh, be careful. We're going to change everything.
He's got more ideas than we can keep up with.
I'm trying to not do that as much. It's just filter out the, hey, God, what do you want us to do through this? But I've struggled the same way. Stay teachable, not just with the word, but, you know, as a husband, as a father, as a brother, as a preacher, you know, whatever. But I'm thinking right now, and this is so good, like, I thought the podcast was going to be one thing, but I think it's about something else. And the word that just keeps coming to me over and over is commitment, which is a part of being faithful. God's commitment to us, our commitment to him. Both of you talked about early on, you know, that initial commitment, a secondary commitment, but then how that commitment played out. And how beautiful a thing, you mentioned it, Stacy, that this is his church. It was his idea. Church in general is God's idea. Mm-hmm. You know, Christ said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. But that's couched in the faithfulness of God. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 through 13, Paul starts this by saying, the saying is trustworthy. And we don't know if that's a hymn or if it was a creed, but it's one of those places in Scripture where it's all indented on both sides, and so it looks like, is this a, you know, a quote? Is this a pull quote, a hymn, or whatever? But this saying is trustworthy, for if we have died with him, we will also live with him. That speaks to the someday. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. And that speaks to his strength, his power. And it ends by saying, for he cannot deny himself. And so, you know, I've said this before. You know, when I came here, I had no intention to stay. When I came here, I went to church, and now I was going to work at a church really just to do youth. I wasn't in love with the local church. Now I'm like, I can't imagine any other job. I can't imagine not being committed to a church. I'd like to think that when they're done with me and I'm, you know, can't keep a straight thought in my head and I'm the guy with the walker, that I still want to be a member at this church. You know, I want to be a part of this church. I don't want to be isolated. I don't want to be alone. And that's the work of a faithful God in my life has been, man, I'm a champion for the local church. Someone wants to say something about, you know, being committed to a church or, you know, I don't, you know, I could be a Christian. I don't need church. It's like, oh, you have no idea. You've either not found a good one yet, or you've never really been committed in the first place. It's not a cult. You know, I know we went through those years too when everyone's so excited about church that, oh, problem with the tab, it's some kind of cult. It's like, nope. We have people that ask questions, hard questions, and people that are opening their Bibles and saying, what does he want me to do? So if we're a cult, it's a cult of the personality of Christ is what I would say. But, I, you know, we're not a cult, so we don't operate that way. But
you know, when you said commitment, I just took note that community, since we're talking about mm-hmm. the church family, look what community and commitment both start with.
Yeah.
I think they're from at least part of the same root word.
Right.
Because you are going to be committed to people.
Right.
I mean, you could be committed
to one another. Yeah.
You could commit to a hobby. You could commit. But I think, like in marriage, you commit. So you become a community with you and God. And so there's, you're committing to community. They kind of come from the same basic source. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're not, you know, I wanted to back up really quick because you asked, something came to my mind when you asked, I'm trying to remember the question, but it was before you asked about what we were learning about God. Maybe it was about the faithfulness and what kept us going or what fueled the faithfulness.
Yeah.
I think, yes, we need to be committed to God no matter what the outcome, because mm-hmm. sometimes it doesn't look good, like being there when there's only 30
right.
people. It's like,
right.
there's nothing. What are you doing, God? But he also knows we're human, and we need encouragement. We even need the attaboys sometimes,
right.
and that's not a wrong pride. But we need the affirmation. Are we on the right path? Are we right where he wants us? Is he working through us? And I think one of the biggest ways for me, besides my own personal growth, was the changed lives.
Hmm, there you go.
Because I have some very close family that I've watched him change lives.
Hmm.
Friends that I look at the changed lives, and that's what makes it more real. It's certainly worth it.
Yeah.
And that's why we're doing what we're doing. And have the hope that there'll be more. We all have people we're praying for.
Yeah.
That we want to see God do the work in their heart that he wants to do. And I have to, if I'm praying, I know he's doing it. That's the kind of faith we have to have.
Yeah.
He says a little bit the size of a mustard seed is powerful.
Right.
That shows you how potent faith is.
Right.
Because that seed's very tiny.
Yeah. And I know for me, what Stacy was referring to is our vision statement, change lives. That's what we're about. And we never really, on this side of heaven, fully reach that, because there's always more lives that need changing. And it's our lives continuing to change. We've talked about that. One of the things along that same vein is when I find times are dark, is that's why podcasts like this are so cool for me, is to remember the remember wins, as Pastor Tim Burgess will say. If he changed them, and he changed and it is changing me, there's still hope out there.
Yeah.
I've seen him do it before. I know he can do it again. And having experienced that, for me, that's the hope that we can bring for our podcast family when they're listening to that stuff.
That's the old Wednesday night testimony time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is now a podcast.
Which is true. I think it's not that everybody has to know everybody's business, but there's a reason for testimony.
Yeah.
And like he says, if you confess, he wants you to speak things. He wants the word. There's power in the word, written and spoken.
Yeah.
And how else, if you don't share it, how's he going to get the glory?
That's right.
How's someone going to be encouraged that, oh, wow, they've come through a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess God can bring me through this.
Well,
you know,
and
there's purpose
God
for it.
God made Israelites build
memorials. Yeah.
And he said, remember.
Look at this.
A lot.
Remember this.
Yeah, because it's always hard to believe. Let them out of the Egypt and part of the Red Sea, and then they get in the desert, and then it's like, oh, you've left us and you've abandoned us.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, water comes from a rock. Oh, now you're going to abandon us, you know, a couple years later or what have you. But this is, you know, it is true that one of the hardest things with the church that has grown so large so fast is a reality is you're not going to know everyone. But if you're committed and you get involved, you're going to know someone and they're going to know you. And that's also like one of the reasons we want to do this is for the people that need that encouragement to get in here and hear these stories. And so I appreciate you guys coming on here and sharing some of your life and sharing some of your tears. It's always, I mean, for me, that's the genuineness of the commitment. And the genuineness that this is really God that's really changing people and changing hearts. And this is also what fuels me. It's not the tears. That's what I'm saying is how much love for him and appreciation we have for him about what he's done. And I don't ever want to get used to it or grow tired of it because that's what it's about. So thank you both, not just for being here, but for that commitment. And your whole family. I mean, we got Benji over here. He's working on the... You know, he's producing this podcast, but one of the great ways, if you ever want to get to know an Arnott son, is to be in the truck, as we call it backstage, run tech stuff. Sometimes Bryson, you know, drawing while he's supposed to be hitting lyrics. You know, hey, Bryson, draw during the sermon. Oh, no, don't do that either, because the point has to come up. But just appreciate that what was modeled to you has been modeled to them and your daughter as well. And so, the fruit of your lives goes on and on and on. And that's an atta girl and an atta boy for both of you, for whatever that's worth. I appreciate it. I know our church, you know, appreciates it as well. So you got any last words for whoever's listening about church or their commitment? Or Steve will give you the last word.
Oh,
you got a last word?
Not really, other than, our mission statement is... You know, love God, love people, and it will change your life.
Yeah. It'll make you into a disciple, and it'll make other people into disciples.
Yeah, it will change your life. God and you love people, especially in that order. But sometimes the loving people is tougher than...
That's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast.
But it's the truth, and we don't dance around the truth.
Right.
That's awesome. You guys like Chick-fil-A? We're still trying to get a sponsorship out of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, a little bit.
Before we had it up here, we tried to always hit one when we went on our trip south.
Oh, same thing. Yeah. Because you had it in the south, right? Or wait,
no.
Were they not big in Florida at that time?
No, they didn't.
Now they're everywhere.
Yeah. Back then, no.
I don't remember where we first
probably
got
Georgia
with it.
Or the Carolinas. Yeah. That's kind of where it really kind of, we used to do that all the time. And now it's like, I probably eat too much Chick-fil-A, as you can tell. But that's not my fault. I'm always dropping off a daughter, and she's bringing me, for you know, sweet teas afterwards.
She works
and
there now, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. She's if you see Gabby at the Chick-fil-A drive-thru, take a selfie. Also, you know what I found out yesterday? So we have a new executive pastor, Adam Ray, and he's Mr. Outdoorsman, right? Mm-hmm. He has never been to the jerky store.
In Dublin.
He has not been to the he's never heard of it.
Oh.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? And
he just was made by his there. Own. Why would he need to?
I was just by there yesterday. I could have gone.
Yeah, but when there's an entire aisle that is just so I think he's making a special trip.
I have not been there either, but I grew up with my mom making jerky.
Yeah,
she did a fine job.
But hey,
jerky.
You can make it, but it's also delicious to go there.
Yeah, pick out all the different kinds.
So to the guys cutting meat at the Dublin General Store, who I know are listening, here's the deal. All that meat that you sent our way never made it because Britton Bishop got to it first. That punk. So I think I've maybe had one piece of like blueberry jerky. It was like a blueberry sausage. Yeah, it was amazing.
They have everything.
So if you want to send some more our way, no free shout outs. You know, we'd love to have that. But thanks again so much for being with us. Podcast family, if you share this, if you know Steve and Stacy, or you know someone that this story will be a blessing to, maybe someone who's on the struggle.
Don't hold that against them.
Yeah, don't hold that against them. But share it on Facebook. You can share it on, or you could share the link from Spotify or from the Tab app or wherever you check out this podcast. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And thank you for being faithful, listening to us. And know that you can press pause whenever you want to and then run in the store and then come back out and then unpause it. That's how I listen to podcasts. Everyone's like, why are they so long? And it's like, well, you just got more of it. It's like a mini series.
Your whole day out shopping.
Exactly. You just catch bits of it. You just pick up the combo where we left it off. But again, thanks so much. Podcast family, until next time, this is Stacy, Steve, Benjamin, and John signing off.